You know, when we think about capturing the eternal essence of a deeply spiritual leader, we usually expect the method to be as intangible as the subject itself.
Right, yeah, like you'd expect poetry or something.
Exactly. You might think of a poem or a piece of like ethereal ambient music. But then you look at watercolor painting and it presents this fascinating, almost impossible paradox.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, how exactly does an artist use something as utterly physical as crushed rocks and a puddle of water to capture the invisible energy of a human soul?
It's almost alchemical, really. I mean, we are so used to walking into a gallery, seeing a finished piece framed neatly behind glass, and we just accept it as a static
Right,
object.
you just look at it and move on.
Yeah, we rarely stop to think about the literal physics required to translate historical memory, and spiritual weight into wet pigment on a piece of paper.
And that translation process is the exact nucleus of our deep dive today. We're not just looking at a painting. We are looking at the intensely documented ecosystem of microscopic decisions that built it.
It's a huge stack of notes we have today.
It really is. We have incredible source material for this deep dive. The personal studio notes, the highly specific technical specifications, and the working philosophy of the artist Jairo Duke.
Which is just a gold mine for understanding the process.
Completely. We are analyzing his documentation for an upcoming book, which details the creation of a very specific watercolor piece titled Sonrisa de Prabhupada, or Prabhupada's Smile.
Right.
This was painted in January 2025, and its ultimate destination is an exhibition in Palma, Spain, coming up in February 2025.
Which means we have this really rare, transparent window into the mind of a master while the work is practically still fresh. But it is important to clarify upfront for you listening, this isn't a painting tutorial.
Oh, yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, we aren't going to teach you how to hold a brush or, mix colors on a palette.
No, our mission today is to decode the source code of creation. We want to understand the causal mechanisms like how chemical reactions on a page and deep philosophical decisions in the artist's mind work together.
To turn a flat, two-dimensional image into a living bridge between cultures, essentially.
Exactly. It's like getting your hands on the private notebook of an open-source software developer or the diary of a stage illusionist. We don't just want to see the final trick. We want to see the underlying architecture and, more importantly, why the artist chose to build it that way in the first place.
The intention behind the tricks, yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this. To understand how this spiritual energy is captured, we first have to look at the incredibly physical, earthly foundations the artist chose to start with.
The environment.
Yeah, the literal environment where this collision of ideas happens.
The environment is crucial. I mean, it's so easy to ignore where an artist physically sits, assuming it's just, background noise.
Yeah.
But the space always dictates the parameters of the work.
For sure.
This deeply introspective painting was created in Duke's studio in Whittier, California. And that geographic detail is not just a piece of trivia. It sets up a vital contrast for the entire creative process.
Right, because Whittier is classic Southern California. You've got the sun, the palm trees, the suburban sprawl, the endless traffic of the Los Angeles area humming right outside the door.
It's loud, yeah.
It is a very bright, very grounded, everyday material reality. You aren't sitting in a silent monastery in the Himalayas, you know? You're in the middle of modern American life.
Exactly. And Duke operates with these early morning routines, preparing his space before the rest of the city wakes up. It's a
A
ritual.
way to center himself.
Yeah. The sunny, everyday reality of Whittier acts as this bright external engine that fuels his work inside the studio. He uses that external energy to lock himself away and explore a purely interior spiritual landscape on his canvas.
It's a profound dichotomy when you think about it.
Totally. Invoking a monumental historical figure of Eastern spirituality while surrounded by California suburbia, preparing a piece that is ultimately destined to fly across the world to an exhibition in Spain.
It's a massive journey before the paint even dries. But when we look at the physical materials he chose to make that journey, it sounds less like delicate fine art and more like he was preparing for a tactical ground war.
It really does.
I mean, the technical specs he uses demand Arch's 640-gram cold-pressed, rough-grain paper.
Which is heavy.
Right. To someone who isn't standing in an art supply store every day, that just sounds like a random string of industry jargon.
Yeah, so to put that into perspective, standard watercolor paper, the kind most artists use comfortably for beautiful, delicate work, is around 300 grams per square meter.
So this is more than double that.
Duke is using 640-gram paper, We are talking about a sheet of pure cottony that has the structural integrity and thickness of heavy cardboard. It is virtually a plank of wood.
And he needs that extreme durability because of what he's going to subject it to. Watercolor requires water, obviously, but he isn't just dampening the page with a polite little sponge.
Yeah, no polite sponges here.
He is unleashing literal floods of water onto this surface. Standard paper would just buckle and warp like an ocean wave, completely ruining the distribution of the color.
It would just pill up and fall apart.
Exactly. This 640-gram fortress of a paper can take an absolute inundation without flinching. Plus, the fact that it's cold-pressed and rough grain is essential. It means the paper wasn't ironed completely flat by hot steel rollers at the factory.
Right. The surface is left covered in these microscopic mountains and valleys.
Which brings us to the paint itself, because those microscopic valleys are about to catch something very heavy. He uses Daniel Smith watercolors, right?
Yeah, and these aren't standard synthetic dyes. Synthetic dyes are basically liquid plastics created in a lab. They just stain the paper fibers evenly, almost like food coloring.
Like how you dye a t-shirt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Daniel Smith paints are made from actual crushed minerals. We are talking about raw elements, sometimes semi-precious stones, literally ground into dust.
And the physics equation of that is wild because these are real minerals. They have actual, tangible, physical weight.
Right.
So when Duke floods the paper, these heavy mineral particles flow in the water, but they don't just stain the surface. Gravity takes over.
They sink.
They physically sink. They tumble down into those microscopic valleys of the rough paper and settle there. It creates this effect called granulation, producing this rich, organic, almost three-dimensional texture that, like, a digital screen could never authentically replicate.
It's quite literally gravity doing the painting.
But wait, hold on. I'm trying to square this.
Yeah.
You just said the ultimate goal of the artist is to capture a delicate, ethereal, transcendent spiritual essence.
I did.
If that's the goal, using industrial-grade cardboard and literal crushed rocks feels completely backward. Why is he using the heaviest possible physical materials for the lightest possible spiritual subject?
What's fascinating here is the beautiful paradox at the heart of that process. The artist needs the strongest possible physical anchor precisely because the subject is so spiritually profound.
Okay, unpack that for me.
Think of it like a kite. If you want a kite to fly incredibly high, you don't use a flimsy string. You need a strong, heavy anchor on the ground, or the whole thing just blows away.
Oh, that makes sense.
The sheer weight of the minerals and the paper grounds the ephemeral nature of the spiritual subject.
And the subject is immense. We are talking about A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the historical founder of the Hare Krishna movement, officially known as ISK Khan.
A massively influential figure.
Huge. If you look at his cultural impact, he's the figure who monumentally bridged ancient Eastern spiritual traditions and the Western world in the 1960s. He arrived in New York and basically rewired a massive part of the counterculture.
He really did.
So you've got this indestructible paper and these heavy gravitational pigments. It's an incredibly aggressive physical foundation. And he needs all of that strength because of the sheer historical weight of the person he's trying to drop onto that paper.
Exactly. And to do that, he uses a concept known in colloquial Latin American Spanish as a trasteo.
A trasteo? What does that literally mean?
A trasteo is a move, like relocating your apartment, physically moving heavy boxes from one building to another, sweating, carrying furniture, all of it.
Okay.
But Duke takes this mundane, everyday concept of a moving day and elevates it to the intangible.
Right, because he isn't moving boxes, he's moving a soul.
Exactly.
The original reference material is a black and white photograph from the 1960s or 70s, but Duke has zero interest in making a biometric photocopy of that photo. He isn't a forensic sketch artist trying to perfectly measure the distance between the cheekbones and the bridge of the nose.
Right, because a photocopy is dead. It's static.
Yeah.
What he is trasteando, what he is relocating, is the leader's charismatic energy. He is pulling that spiritual resonance out of the historical archive of a grainy 1960s photo and dropping it right into the vibrant living present of his California studio.
He is translating the soul, not just mapping the face.
Precisely.
But if a painter is trying to elevate a divine transcendent figure, wouldn't the natural temptation be to clean him up?
You mean aesthetically?
Yeah. I mean, look at the palette Duke uses for the skin. He relies on warm earth tones, ochres, mud browns, very literal dirt-based colors. If you are painting a spiritual icon, wouldn't you want to smooth out the wrinkles and use ethereal, angelic colors instead of the colors of literal dirt?
That would certainly be the easy way out. And honestly, that is the way a lot of commercial portraiture works today, airbrushing away reality to create a flawless Instagram filter ideal.
Right, making everyone look 25 forever.
But Duke's philosophy is the exact opposite. He views the wrinkles not as imperfections to be hidden, but as vital features to be exaggerated.
Exaggerated.
Yeah. Every folding crease is a map of wisdom. It's a record of a life lived. To Duke, true spirituality isn't found in the absence of the human experience.
Wow, okay.
It isn't about looking like a flawless, untouched plastic doll. True spirituality is the culmination of the human experience. The time etched into the skin is the map of that journey.
I love that. The wrinkles are the map. But building those intricate three-dimensional maps of wisdom out of watery paint is dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Which sounds terrifying, honestly. If I stack three or four layers of brown, watery paint, I don't get a glowing spiritual map. I get the color of a dirty puddle in a parking lot.
Right, it just turns to mud.
Exactly. Okay. So to avoid making mud, the artist relies on the physics of light, which inherently mirrors the entire theme of spiritual illumination.
The specific technique he uses to build this map is called voluduras, or glazes.
Glazing.
Yeah, and it requires immense, almost meditative patience. A veladura involves applying a highly diluted, almost totally transparent layer of watercolor and then waiting for it to dry completely before adding the next.
Layer upon layer upon layer.
Exactly.
And the reason that doesn't just turn into an opaque, muddy wall comes down to the chemistry of the paint, right?
That's right. If you were using oil paint, stacking layers works differently. Oil paint is opaque, light hits the surface of the painting and just bounces off.
It's solid.
Yeah, but watercolor, especially when built with meticulous, transparent veladuras, acts like a stained glass window in a cathedral.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
The light from the room you are standing in actually travels through the transparent layers of pigment, hits the bright white of that heavy arches cotton paper underneath, and then bounces back out to your eye.
So the light literally emanates from within the subject. The subject is physically glowing from the inside out because of how the light waves are traveling.
Yes.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. The psychological manipulation of color that Duke uses to force you to see that glow.
It's so smart.
He surrounds this incredibly warm, earthy, meticulously glazed face with a background of deep, intensely cold blue. It's pure optical physics.
It is a radical chromatic decision. In optics, warm colors, like the earthy ochres in the face, have longer wavelengths. They naturally appear to advance toward the viewer's eye.
They come at you.
Exactly. Cold colors, like that deep blue background, naturally appear to recede. By freezing the atmosphere of the background, the brain of the viewer is tricked. It forces that warm, luminous face to aggressively pop forward out of the paper.
It's exactly like a theatrical spotlight isolating a single actor on a dark stage.
Yeah.
Yes. Very dramatic.
Or, for a more modern analogy, it's like using the bokeh effect on your smartphone camera when you take a portrait. The software aggressively blurs and darkens the background, so you, the viewer, are forced to look only at the subject's face. All context is stripped away. You have nowhere else to look.
And Dupe tightens that focus even further by using a very restrictive close-up framing.
No.
There is no environment, no historical accessories, no temple in the background. It is just the face dominating the space.
Just the face.
And the posture of that face is highly intentional. The head is slightly tilted. The chin is raised, and the gaze is looking softly upward.
Which is completely different psychologically than, say, a subject looking down with their chin tucked. If a portrait subject is looking down, you read them as defensive or brooding or maybe judging the viewer.
Exactly. An upward tilt, exposing the neck, is an anatomically vulnerable posture. It signals openness, optimism, and reception. The subject is embracing for an attack. They're receiving light and knowledge.
But inside that incredibly focused, intensely psychological framing, there's this massive visual friction that caught me completely off guard.
Oh, the clothing.
Yes. The face, as we discussed, is painted with these microscopic, incredibly patient, transparent layers. But when you look at how he handled the clothing of Prabhupada, he abandons that microscopic care entirely.
It's a complete shift.
He uses fast, loose, almost careless strokes of the brush.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild to look at a hyper-detailed, glowing face anchored to clothing that looks like it was dashed off in 3 seconds.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it becomes clear that this isn't technical laziness or a rush to finish the piece.
Right. He didn't just get bored.
No, it is a ciphered message. Duke is making a profound philosophical argument through his brushwork. In the realm of spirituality, the material wrapper, the clothing, the physical body itself, is ephemeral.
It's temporary.
It is secondary. It is fleeting. The only thing that demands permanence, meticulous care, and structural detail is the expression of the soul.
Wow. The clothes are just a suggestion because in the grand spiritual scheme, they don't matter. The soul is the only thing in focus.
Exactly.
And all of this intense visual hierarchy, the glowing glazes, the cold blue background pushing the warm face forward, the blurred fast clothing, it all serves to force your eye to the absolute center of the painting. It leads us directly to the narrative axis of the piece.
Right. Everything orbits a single focal point.
Yeah.
Brancupata's broad, frank, and luminous smile.
The smile.
That smile is the gravity well of the entire watercolor. It is the literal reason the piece is titled Sonrisa de Prabhupada.
And it does something incredible. Through that specific glowing smile, Duke transmutes the subject.
He changes him entirely.
Prabhupada goes from being just the institutional, historical founder of a movement locked in a 1960s photograph into a timeless, universal symbol of spiritual joy and peaceful conviction.
The smile is the bridge that connects the history to the viewer.
But exploring how that bridge was built reveals a startling level of transparency from the artist.
The self-critique.
Yes. This blew my mind. Duke is publishing a book about his masterpiece, and right there, printed alongside the work, he includes harsh, cold self-criticism.
It's so rare to see that.
He evaluates his final piece and openly admits that the tonal transitions in the shadows of the face could have been more subtle. He says that if he had varied the nuances in the dark areas more, he could have created even better three-dimensional depth.
Just putting it all out there.
Now, why on earth would a master artist publish his own technical flaws right next to his masterpiece? Doesn't that completely destroy the illusion of his genius for you, the viewer?
It's an incredibly bold move, especially in a professional world that is currently obsessed with digital perfection and AI-generated flawlessness.
Right, where everyone wants to look like a genius who never makes a mistake.
But Duke's reasoning for leaving those flaws and explicitly pointing them out contains perhaps the deepest lesson of the entire process. He values the spontaneity of the water far more than he values sterile, photorealistic perfection.
Mm-hmm. Because watercolor isn't a medium of control. You can't just put it exactly where you want it and expect it to stay.
Exactly. Water obeys the laws of fluid dynamics.
Right.
It has surface tension. It evaporates at completely unpredictable rates, depending on the ambient humidity in the Whittier air that morning.
That's true. The weather literally changes the painting.
And the heavy mineral pigments we talked about. They float and migrate inside the water droplets until the very last second of drying. You do not rigidly control watercolor. You collaborate with chaos.
Collaborate with chaos. That's a great way to put it. He actually advises young painters to let the water speak. If you try to aggressively micromanage the water, you kill the freshness of the painting. You murder the art in pursuit of precision.
And this perfectly mirrors the overarching spiritual message of the subject. Spirituality, human connection, and historical memory. They all flow like water.
Yeah.
If you try to rigidly control them, if you try to package them perfectly into dogmatic little boxes without any flaws, they lose their vitality. They become plastic.
They become dead, basically.
Duke is showing us that vulnerability and honesty will always beat sterile perfection. Leaving the process visible, flaws and all, is an ethical artistic decision. It honors the authentic lived experience over an artificial ideal.
So what does this all mean? When we zoom out from the paper and the paint, the overarching takeaway for you listening is that every single technical detail obeys an intention.
Every single one.
The weight of the 640-gram paper holding back a flood, the heavy crust stone settling into the valleys, the decision to leave a brushstroke loose and careless to symbolize the ephemeral body, or the bravery to publish a technical flaw, none of it is an accident.
The medium and the message are completely inseparable.
And that is a reality that applies just as much to how you build a business strategy, how you write an email, or how you communicate with your family as it does to fine art. The tools you use and the flaws you allow are the foundation of your actual message.
It really reframes how we look at the things we create and the spaces we inhabit. And to that point, I want to leave you with a mental experiment, something that steps away from the canvas and looks at how we navigate our own modern lives.
I love these. Go ahead.
Think about the objects on your desk right now or the saved photos on your phone. If you are forced to paint the narrative axis of your current state of mind today, using nothing but water, heavy pigment, and a single focal point, what would that central expression be?
Man, that is a phenomenal question to sit with. What is your narrative axis today? We want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of a single smile. Keep questioning the hidden intentions behind the everyday details around you. Remember that sometimes you just have to collaborate with chaos, and we will see you on the next deep dive.